Hello, and welcome to the premiere episode of Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that covers the arts in Northern Chautauqua County, sponsored by the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. My name is Tom Laughlin, and I'm excited to be your host as we bring you news and information about arts events at the Opera House and around the region, as well as interviews with artists and creators across the county. The music you're hearing in the background is a rendition of the Nina Simone standard, My Baby Just Cares For Me, as performed by the Ecstasis Duo. Composed of Fredonia School of Music faculty members Eliran Avni on piano and Natasha Farney on cello, the Ecstasis Duo will be performing live at the Opera House on September 25th at 7:30 p.m. You'll hear an interview with the duo later on in the podcast. This will be the first live performance event at the Opera House since the pandemic brought down the curtain in March of 2020. It's been a trying 18 months for visual and performing artists regionally and nationwide, and I must say it's exciting to begin this podcast just as the curtain is coming up on a new season with live performances. Someone who's probably more excited than I am is the executive director of the 1891 Fredonia Opera House, Mr. Rick Davis. Even though there have been no live events since the spring of 2020, Rick and his staff have been working diligently behind the scenes to make a number of improvements to the Opera House's facilities. I spoke with Rick about the pandemic shutdown and what's been happening these past 18 months. Rick, welcome to the podcast. I hope you're excited about getting this thing off the ground as I am.
Thanks. We're all really excited.
Yeah, it's going to be quite the adventure, quite the adventure. You are getting set to open the 1891 Opera House once again to live performances after the pandemic shut you down in, I believe, March of 2020. And even though you were shut down and didn't have any live performances, you did get a number of things done in the Opera House. Why don't you give us an overview of what you've managed to do in the last 18 months?
Yeah, we kept busy. We were really fortunate that the Village of Fredonia, who actually owns our building, received a $1.3 million grant for Opera House improvements back in 2018. This was from New York State Empire Development Fund. And these are improvements, capital improvements, that are designed to be put into place for economic development and to foster economic development within a community. So the state considers the Opera House an economic driver, and we were able to utilize this money to do several large improvements, things that we could not have done without the grant. So what did we do? Well, we did things like that you're not going to see, but you're certainly going to experience. Like, we upgraded our heating and air conditioning system. So the cooling in particular in the Opera House is it's much more consistently cool, and it's more energy efficient. And the air filtration is certainly better and more up to standards that are expected here during this time of COVID. We also gutted and remodeled and expanded the public restrooms in the basement level of Village Hall. So all of our patrons have, gosh, they're the nicest bathrooms in the building right now.
I'll have to have you give me a tour when I get there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're really nice, and they're up to ADA compliance for wheelchair mobility, and they're open to the public when they're here for our events. We also restored 67 windows in the Opera House, took physically removed the window sashes, rebuilt them if they needed to be rebuilt, replaced the glass. They still are single pane windows because this structure is located in a historic district, and because we were using state money, we had to work with the State Office of Historic Preservation. So they were very concerned that the nature of the windows stay with what would be historically original. So we couldn't replace them with double pane vinyl windows, for example. We had to restore them. But we were able to put a thicker glass, so we have better sound insulation from outdoor noise, and they're much more energy efficient, and they're nice, they're tightly sealed right now. So it's a much better experience attending a live performance here, or any performance here in the Opera House. You don't hear things coming from outside, and I'm sure that the heating and air conditioning bills will be much better in the long run because of that. We also, and this is what we were most excited about, is that we installed a new marquee over the Temple Street entrance to the building. And again, because it's state money, we had to work with the State Historic Preservation Office. The interesting thing is, when this building opened in 1891, there was no marquee on the building anywhere. One was added later, around 1910, I believe, and it was in place for the movie theater that was here for several decades, until a snowplow hit the support poles and took it down. But because there was no original marquee on the building, working with State Historic Preservation Office was interesting, because they wanted something that had a very minimal impact to the building. And after four or five different design iterations, we settled on what we ultimately installed, and we're really, really happy with it. And the impact is so minimal. The entire marquee is only held in place by 16 bolts into the building. So
that's amazing. 16 bolts. That's really so minimal.
It is. And so in theory, it could be removed tomorrow, and aside from the holes for the bolts, that's the only impact to the building, and those can be filled. So we're real pleased with the way it looks, and it's doing what it was intended to do. It is promoting our events. Within 3 hours of it being in place and actually functioning, a couple from Pittsburgh driving by stopped, came in and bought tickets to our George Winston concert in November because they saw it on the marquee. And they're coming back from Pittsburgh in November to see the concert. So that's what it's intended to do. And it's exciting that it's actually doing it. And then one thing we didn't do, because we didn't think that there was going to be funding left in the grant, is replace our seats, our theater seating. And as it turns out, there is money left in the grant that we can use for that. And so we're now working to plan for replacing all of the seats in the theater. Probably will happen in February. We were hoping it could happen end of October, early November. And that's still a possibility, but materials, the availability of materials is delayed for so many projects and so many things today because of the impact of COVID. We're being told that our fabric choice is probably going to hold up the construction of the seats or the creation of the seats for a bit. So probably February, we'll be able to replace all of the seats. They'll be wider, they'll be more comfortable. Because we're taking them out and putting new ones in, we can reduce the number of seats and afford more leg room downstairs. Upstairs, where the floor is tiered, we're kind of stuck with the leg room situation, but the seats at least will be more comfortable and certainly wider for folks. Our seats right now today are 15 inches, 17 inches, and 18 inches wide.
Wow.
And and people are much wider than that today.
Yeah, they are. They are. I know it's a lot of times if I go into an historical building and all of a sudden you try to get through a doorway of some place that was built 200 years ago, you realize how much smaller people were then.
Exactly. And these seats were installed in the theater in the 1920s. So, you know, they're 100 years old.
Yeah.
The new seats will be 20 inches, 22 inches, 24 inches. So I think people will be, and they'll be fully upholstered.
Yeah.
So good. I think people will find them to be a great improvement.
Great. Well, I, you know, there's always a silver lining someplace to the pandemic, and for sure the ability to do all of that renovation without having to worry about audience and programming was a little bit of a silver lining to the whole thing.
Absolutely. Yes. Particularly the window restoration. I mean, we went for several months with the windows removed and just plywood up. So, trying to do all of that and still present events, while that's what we had initially planned, in hindsight, it worked out much better this way. And it would have been extremely difficult to be doing that while events were going on.
Yeah, I'm sure. Let's turn to this subject. I know that you've been open now just for the movie series right now. You've had audiences in there and stuff like that. So I'm curious to let people know what are the going to be the requirements, the health requirements for coming in and seeing a live show, seeing a movie. What will audiences have to expect?
So right now, because the level of the positivity rate within Chautauqua County places us in the high designation, the CDC guidelines call for everybody to be masked when indoors, regardless of vaccination status. And that's what we're complying with. So right now, whether it's a movie or a live performance event, we are asking, we're requiring actually all of our patrons to wear masks when they're here in the building and inside the theater for the duration of the performance. Hopefully, this will be a temporary thing, and as the situation improves here within the county, we'll be able to go back to not having to wear masks if you're vaccinated, and at some point, not having to wear masks at all, regardless. But for right now, and for the foreseeable future, we're requiring masks of everybody.
Okay, that's obviously good information to know. Another subject obviously has to do with your programming. What kind of programming have you got coming up in the fall? And I imagine it's been difficult to reschedule any number of things, but what's kind of come up this fall for us to participate in?
Yeah, so our fall events are largely events that had been planned for 2020 and were canceled during COVID or rescheduled during COVID. So we have in September, our very first performance is with Xstasis Duo on September 25th. We're really excited about that. And they're going to kick off the live event series. In October, we have an incredible bluegrass band out of Chicago, the Special Consensus, and they were supposed to be with us last fall, and very graciously rescheduled for this year. November, we have the solo pianist George Winston coming in. We're really excited about that, and in fact, had quite a number of pre-sale tickets prior to his planned performance last year. All of those tickets, if you still have tickets for George Winston when you were planning on coming in 2020, those tickets are still good for his performance here in November. And then in December, we have a jazz trio out of Buffalo, the Ed Croft Trio, and they're coming in to do the Vince Guaraldi score from A Charlie Brown Christmas and probably some other holiday music as well. So those are what we're planning for the fall, and they're all rescheduled from 2020. And as we move into the spring, we're starting to book new events and a few more rescheduled events as well. Some events, the artists were not able to reschedule, and unfortunately, we'll have to look at them for some other time. But if you had tickets for any of our events that were canceled, and we've rescheduled them, those tickets will still be good.
Good. And I assume Live at the Met is still going to go on, and the movie series will go on.
Yes, Live at the Met announced a few weeks ago that they are going to reopen and start their season in October. And so we'll have 10 operas, 10 Saturday afternoons, where you can come in and see by satellite an opera on our screen live as it's happening at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. The Bolshoi Ballet is going to be offering a few of its Bolshoi Ballet Live performances. I think there is one this fall, and then the rest are in the spring. We're still waiting to hear from the National Theater in London on what their plans are. We've not heard about any new productions. There are a number of encore productions that we could present, but we've presented them already, and we're waiting to hear on what they have that will be new.
Oh, that's good. Good. I look forward to those. I saw some of those actually, you know, while in quarantine last winter, and some of them were absolutely outstanding. I really do recommend them if no one's seen the National Theater productions. They're quite good.
They're masters at staging. I'm constantly amazed at what they're able to do in their various performance spaces over there. And you know, a lot of those productions transfer and come over to Broadway from right. London. So, and then are very well received here as well. So you're actually able sometimes to see those productions here before they even make it to Broadway. So come to the Opera House and see them on the screen, and you get an advance peek at it.
Yes, that's good. And I have to say, I didn't feel like I lost anything seeing it on the screen as opposed to seeing it live. The way that, not only the way they stage it, but the way they film it, really quite well done.
It's remarkable that I know the Met Live series, they have like 13 cameras placed around the theater. Wow. That they're using for one of their productions. So you and people that come to our Live at the Met series here, one of the things that they repeatedly say that they like is when you're at the Met, you might be 100 yards back and everybody looks like, you know, tiny ants on the stage. But with Live at the Met, you get close-ups. You see the singers' faces and expressions as they're singing and performing. And it's really a different experience for most people. So a better one in many instances.
Yes. That's absolutely true. Let's talk about one final thing, and that's the upcoming marathon. You've got a fundraiser coming, 5K run, 5K fundraiser. Talk about that a little bit.
We do. So 4 years ago, we started the 1891 run, which was a 5K run and walk that is our major fundraiser for the year. 2019, we held it prior to the pandemic, and we were really pleased to have like 150 runners in each of those years. Last year, the run became a virtual run, and this year we're doing it as a hybrid run. So some of our runners or participants are doing the run on their own using an app that they can download and that records their time. But if you're interested in running in person, we are holding the run in person on Sunday, September 19th at 9 in the morning. It's a real easy, fast 5K route here in Fredonia. It utilizes Temple Street, Central Avenue. A little bit of the route is on the SUNY Fredonia campus. And except for that very small incline at the start of Central Avenue, it's a relatively flat route. So it's a fast route. And there are medals for the top three finishers overall and top three finishers, male and female, in each of various age categories. It's $25 to register for the run. It's the Opera House's main fundraiser for the year. And it supports our operations. We're excited to be doing it in person again. And normally we do this in April when there are not a lot of other runs going right. on. So it's one of the first ones in the year. But, you know, with COVID, it was rescheduled this year. So we're doing it here in the fall. But you can expect that we would be doing it the fifth run this coming April. So
great. Okay.
If you miss us this time, please, you know, watch for us and run in April. But we're hoping for good weather.
Yeah, let's hope for good weather. That's for sure. Okay. Well, listen, Rick, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. And good luck with the opening of the season. I know this has got to be a milestone for everybody at the Opera House, everybody in the Village, and everybody who's interested in the arts in Chautauqua County, for sure.
Well, thanks. We're real excited about it. Hope to see people here.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot, Rick. I'll be talking to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tom.
My thanks to Rick for sitting down for that interview. I want to put in my own plug for the 1891 run. I did the run, well, for me, the walk, last year virtually, and I'm doing it again this year as well. It's a great event that mixes a chance to get some not too strenuous exercise with a good cause. And it's a great opportunity to get out there with friends and family and enjoy the crisp fall weather. The run takes place this coming Sunday, September 19th, beginning at 9 a.m. You must pre-register online as there's no registration on site before the run. Information about the run is available on the Opera House's website at www.fredopera.org. Also coming up in these next 2 weeks is Respect, a biopic on the life of Aretha Franklin as portrayed by Jennifer Hudson. Part of the Opera House cinema series, Respect will be playing on Saturday, September 18th and Tuesday, September 21st at 7:30 p.m. Natasha Farney and Eliran Avni met as students at Juilliard some years ago, and there must have been something in the air back then, as later on they would both join the music faculty in the School of Music at SUNY Fredonia. They decided in 2018 to form a duo for piano and cello. The word ecstasis is a Greek term, meaning the experience of standing outside of oneself, and their music certainly gives the listener the opportunity to do just that. They've dedicated themselves to performing secret jewels by lesser-known composers, and they will be bringing to the Opera House on Saturday, September 25th, their program entitled From the Shadows. I had a chance to catch up with the duo amidst their busy schedules. Let me start first by asking Natasha if she can explain a little bit about how the two of you met to form your little duo here.
Sure. Initially, we met at Juilliard, although we didn't really know each other that well. I remember seeing Eliran in the hallways. I remember his head sticking out above the rest of the throng of students because he's very tall. and usually there was a smile on his face. And so when he came to Fredonia to interview for the piano position about 6 years ago, I remember thinking, oh, that's the guy with the smile.
Oh, that's great. And so you got together, Eliran, when you came to Fredonia, you formed the duo, is that correct?
Yes. And the funny thing is that I remember Natasha playing with a colleague of ours, with Franz Mo, was it right, Natasha?
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, her beautiful playing, and I think, oh my God, she plays so beautifully, and her name is Natasha. Oh, it's a perfect combination. So I think I fell in love like back, you know, like 10 years ago when we were in the doctoral program. So it's really a dream come true. And I couldn't ask for a better person to make beautiful music with.
She is the one, apparently. I caught this phrase. I couldn't help it when I was doing a little research. The both of you. She seems to be the one you live, breathe and die for when you're
on
the stage.
Right.
Yes. But listen, I think both of us play a lot of chamber music, and I can surely attest that it's rare to find somebody who really 100% mirror your musical personality back at you with the same intensity, the same ability, the same sensitivity. So really, that's what I find so exquisite and wonderful in this collaboration, that we really are vibing on the same level, on the same wavelength, and it's wonderful to make music with somebody like that.
Yeah, I feel the same way. In fact, that might bring you to your next question about our name.
Yes, the name. I'm interested in it.
Well, I'll just start by saying briefly that we chose it because it reflects how we feel about music.
Uh-huh.
We are both pretty ecstatic when we play, and so we thought we would use this Greek term, ecstasis. So that's the name. But But actually, the story is that, you know, I was telling Eliran, I said, you know, when we find a name, we really should find a name that's easy to pronounce, easy to spell. It's an English word so that people can recognize us right away.
And look where we ended up.
Yes, I love the name, because I mean, when you just see it as someone who's looking at it, you know, and saying, oh, what kind of music did they play? And you get that feel of the ecstatic feeling that's in the name. I says, well, they've got to be pretty dynamic, because the name itself just brings that alive for someone who's just looking at the name, I think. Now, the kind of music that you play seems to be a little bit eclectic and unique, and across many different styles. I wouldn't say, you know, you probably wouldn't consider yourself having one style, but how would you characterize the kind of music that you play?
Good music. Ah. In a nutshell. No, but in all seriousness, I think that both Natasha and I, we have a sensitivity for finding pieces that are not performed often, in fact, maybe never performed. Mm-hmm. And we really feel passionately about bringing it to the foreground. And the program that we're going to present at the Opera House is, I don't know, a treasure trove of pieces of that sort. The two big pieces, the Walker Sonata, George Walker is African-American composer who won the Pulitzer, who wrote incredible works. His canon is you know, piano sonatas, concerti, anything under the sun. And yet I don't see his name appear in really any concert programs that I've been to in the last, you know, what, 30 years. And it's a shame, because the music is exquisite. The music is on the same level as Prokofiev's and Barber and Bernstein. It's that complex, it's that interesting, it's that good. And the other piece, the Henriette Bosmans, that's a discovery. I mean, both of these are discoveries of Natasha's, but the Henriette Bosmans is a Rachmaninovesque cello sonata of massive proportions. It's a concerto for both instruments. The music is lush, powerful, virtuosic, soaring. It's really just an incredible, incredible masterpiece. Who knew? Who has ever heard of Henriette Bosmans? And who knew that she wrote so beautifully? So that's really the core of the concert. And there are other pieces by Alma Mahler and Alexander Zemlinsky. So it's a good mix of styles and periods. Mm-hmm. I guess we would say that we are classical musicians. We will play, you know, anything from Baroque to contemporary music. And we have this little sweet addition with the Nina Simone songs that my colleague, Dan Kaufman, who is a wonderful jazz pianist, arranged for us.
And I got an opportunity to hear those, obviously, and they really fascinated me, I have to tell you, because, you know, Nina Simone was quite the artist, the energetic artist in her day. And those pieces, the way they sort of spoke to me, I mean, they all had a different slant to them. I thought, you know, when I looked at My Baby Just Cares For Me, it seemed like kind of a static, a standard rendition. And then Don't Smoke in Bed had that same melodic feeling that the original non-melodic feeling. But and then I was really fascinated to listen to Love Me or Leave Me, because the arrangement is really unique. I know, yes. Elrond, you pay some homage to her tremendous Bach influenced solo.
Yes, you got it. Tom, you're on. Good for you. You get A++.
Oh, thank you. Can you speak to that a little? I'm interested in that.
In her own rendition of the song, she goes into improvising a fugue.
Yes.
In the middle. So, and there are different fugues, because I've been stalking her videos on YouTube. So I think I see it every version. It's not the same fugue. She's improvising different fugues. So again, I'm so amazed by the woman's talent and musicianship and, you know, her pianism and her artistry and her singing that, I mean, it's an honor to play these three songs and to give her an homage. And I think Dan did a superb job in creating these. And I think Natasha is doing an incredible job at bringing sort of, I guess, channeling Nina through the cello playing and making it sound like she's right there with us on stage.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask Natasha about that. The what goes through your your mind or your heart when you're playing those solos from Don't Smoke in Bed, because they just have a sensibility about them that really echoes the way that Nina sung the original. But you know, it's just so haunting in a way.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have noticed over the centuries that the cello speaks like the human voice. It's a really wonderful instrument because you can play bassy sounds, or there's the middle range, and then of course the very high range soprano sounds. So it matches the human voice so well, and it's actually kind of fun to try to mimic a singer on the cello, the way you can make a glissando or a breathy sound. And I also wanted to just point out, you know, Nina Simone was a student at Juilliard.
Yes, she was.
Did you know that, Tom? Yeah.
Yes, I saw. Huh? I did. I saw that. Yeah. I also saw that when I was reading her biography, I think that the Curtis School of Music in Philadelphia gave her an honorary degree like 4 days before she died, which was, you know, that was quite something too. She had quite the hard life, but she merely made some beautiful music. Tell me something. How did the both of you manage to get through the pandemic in terms of you know, looking for places and styles to perform, to get your music out there, Natasha?
Well, actually, you know, we had applied for some grants at Fredonia to support a CD project, and we had won two grants. We were so proud of ourselves. And so we had this August date for recording. And then, boom, all of a sudden, the pandemic hit. And Eliron got sick. He was in New York City. And I was here in Buffalo. And we just were completely thrown. What do we do? How do we rehearse for this really important CD recording? And so it wasn't that we were trying to find ways to connect. We had to.
We had
to connect because we had this recording session. So Eliron, he's a whiz with technology, and he figured out all these different ways. One of them was recording ourselves separately and sending the recording to each other. And so we would play with each other's recordings. But then really the best was our Skype sessions. Eliron, do you want to tell them about those, where we were watching?
Well, yeah, we basically just schedule a 2-hour rehearsal and listen to recordings together and come up with the decisions of what we were going to do. And I mean, I would like to contrast it with the real normal preparation for a recording, but I thought we did some really excellent work. And it really comes to show you that if you come prepared with your decisions, your tempi, your ideas, and you discuss them in advance, then the recording process becomes a lot simpler.
And we should say that the recordings we listened to were our own live performances. And right. So, Tom, we expected that, oh, you know, Natasha is always flat on that E. So maybe we should discuss that. Or Eliron is always a little late on that F, or, you know, whatever. So ensemble.
Natasha, color. Natasha, I'm never late. I'm always too early. Come on. Be honest.
Well, good. I'm glad you managed to be able to find a way to do that, because I know it's really been a tough 18 months for many artists, and I'm sure you're more than happy to get back to playing live on the stage in a couple
yes.
of weeks.
Oh yeah,
for sure. All right. Well, anything else you want to tell us, the audience, before we go? What can they expect when you perform, and are they going to enjoy themselves? Yes.
Of course. Come on. I mean. Alexander Zemlinsky, Alma Mahler, Walker, Bosmans. We have a beautiful nocturne by Lili Boulanger, who is the sister of Nadia Boulanger, and the Nina Simone song. Maybe you don't know any of these names. Maybe the names of the composers don't make much of an impact on you, but I can really promise you that you're going to come and hear incredibly beautiful music, very expressive, very moving, and that you should know these names, the Walker and Bosmans and Boulanger and Mahler, of course. She, you know, being the wife of, and we don't give her credit for being composer in her own right, it's so important that we incorporate this beautiful music into the canon, and we celebrate their great achievements.
Great. Well, good, good. I'm sure everybody's looking forward, and thank you for joining me in this podcast. This is the premiere version of the podcast, so you're my first interview. So,
yay!
You'll go down in history, right?
Yes.
Thanks to the two of you. I appreciate your time. Take care.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye.
Okay. My thanks to Eliran and Natasha for giving me some time to speak with them. Let's hear a short excerpt from one of the pieces they'll be performing. This is the opening passage to their rendition of Alma Mahler's composition Die Stille Stadt, or The Silent City, from her five songs. That brings us to the end of this premiere episode of Notes from the Aisle Seat. I hope you enjoyed the podcast and that you'll join us every other Wednesday as we bring you more news and information about arts events in the Northern Chautauqua region. My thanks again to Rick Davis for both allowing me to pursue this project and sitting down for the interview, and for the Ecstasis duo, Eliran Avni and Natasha Farney, for letting me hone my still-developing interview skills on them. I'm Tom Lachlan, and I'll be listening for you the next time. Be safe out there, and be kind to one another.